soaking wet and lost out in a storm. We went inside a spooky house hoping to get warm. A dusty clock said 6:30, we knew that it was wrong. When we set the hands to 12, the clock began to bark.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show. I hope you enjoyed that first season of Sigma 6, which is now over. You're about to get 3 straight months of seasonal holiday material. Usually we wait till February to bust out the Christmas. This year we're on top of it because Gina made us get a calendar. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Race Decanus.
Are you under the impression that Halloween and Christmas are the same holiday?
I mean, for Target, they are.
Yeah, Christmas and Halloween are both up simultaneously in Home Depot right now. You tell me. It was September 30th, and I went to Lowe's, and it was loaded with Christmas stuff, and I was not happy.
Christmas for goths happens all October.
I mean, fair. It's true.
Then Christmas for, I guess, Martha Stewart's is November.
November, okay. I would say, who's that racist lady who puts butter in everything? Paula Deen. I think it's Paula Deen, yeah.
Except Paula Deen actually has like a Christmas special, I think. So calling it a Paula Deen Christmas is kind of confusing.
Oh.
Yeah. But we're still going to do it. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. Then Christmas is just Christmas for fucking normies.
Yeah. Good old Xmas for the Xmas bunny. Who are you people?
I don't even know anymore, man.
You know, we get out of G.I. Joe for a moment, making both of you in theory happy. We come back and nobody's happy. What is happening right now?
Oh, no, I'm happy. I'm happy that we got to watch a Halloween, not a Christmas special like you introduced it.
It's Halloween adjacent, though. It stars a ghost.
It is Halloween. What? I think your brain is not properly working. I literally just said, I'm happy that we got to watch a Halloween special, not a Christmas special, like you said in your intro.
Well, I just called it seasonal material.
No, you.
I'm happy that we're done.
Let's go to the tape.
Absolutely not. I have no interest in editing or doing anything like reflectiveness upon my own self. And how I can improve. It goes down a dark path, a path I do not want to follow.
Yeah, if I improved myself anymore, other people would start feeling bad, and I can't have that.
I just keep on improving so that I can look down on you guys. That's my only goal.
My plan is to keep programming holiday material until we forget that we ever did G.I. Joe. So we don't have to come back and finish any of this nonsense.
Good luck with that.
My deathbed, I'm going to sit straight up and say, no, we didn't finish all of it.
Yeah, no
shot.
That
will be my final victory.
No, because then I'll just refuse to die forever.
Wow.
All those billionaires trying to live forever should talk to you about how to do it. Gina's got it figured out.
Chan, you're gonna live forever. What are you talking about? Your hatred will keep you going.
See, that's the thing, is I'm not as hate filled as I once was, and I am very concerned that yes, indeed, it will lead to my demise.
Wait, is this why you still do the show? Is to keep the rage meters, like, you know, keep throwing some coal in that fire?
I was honestly hoping that this would be kind of an enjoyable cartoon, and oh my god, I hated it. So I guess. Uh-oh. I guess maybe that is why I'm doing this. Wait,
Gina, what'd you think of this cartoon?
I thought it was fine.
It's going to be a Gina versus Ray and Chan episode, everybody. Buckle in. We don't get many of those.
Oh my.
Listen, I'm not saying it was great. I'm just saying I'm very forgiving when it comes to like holiday specials, and this was okay.
I mean, well, it's not a special.
It's not a special
thing.
In any way. There's nothing special about this show.
Listen, anything that we watch during October counts as an October special.
I mean, fair. Now, we didn't actually talk about it. This is Hanna-Barbera's Funky Phantom, a show that lasted one season back in like 1972, 73.
71.
71, same thing. And my first thought was, is this a Scooby-Doo ripoff, or did Scooby or did this come first and Scooby-Doo just did this premise better? And the answer is it's a Scooby-Doo ripoff.
Yeah.
A Scooby-Doo ripoff with a Revolutionary War era ghost, which is...
who dies in a clog, which is very dark for a kid cartoon. But I don't know, like, here's the thing. It's Hanna-Barbera. It has the same voice actors. I don't know if you can rip yourself off. Like, it literally on the Wikipedia page, it says the show was a clone of Scooby-Doo.
Of course it was.
Trio of teenage detectives driving around the country and solving crimes. In this case, the Scooby-Doo role was taken by a Revolutionary War era ghost.
This is also not the only Scooby-Doo ripoff that Hanna-Barbera did. And I feel like when you do multiple takes on one successful property, even if it is you doing it, it's got to be considered a ripoff.
Listen, have you guys never found a pair of pants that fits you really great? Boy, and then you bought four more pairs of those pants in different colors?
Yes, I absolutely have done that.
I immediately cut them off at the knees to make jorts. And, you know, technically they're ripoffs.
Oh, I hate this.
You know, we didn't even mention it's a ghost of a Revolutionary War character.
Oh, my God. Are you doing a bit or is this for real?
Okay, no. I'm pretty sure this time it's a bit.
I would like to add to that thing that Gina said already. I would like to add one more piece of information to it. It is if you'd let me finish my sentence, my goodness.
But when you voice, start with the thing that nobody has mentioned, and Chan and I both said that.
Yeah.
And I gave you the credit. This is progress, Gina.
No, it's not. Oh.
No, because
so it's a Revolutionary War ghost.
That the one minority here, the one racial minority, was ignored.
Had
his credit taken from him. My God, what are we living in, 1971?
He is a Revolutionary War ghost with the character and voice of goddamn Snagglepootin. I almost said Snagglepootin, and then I realized that's absolutely wrong. Vladimir Snagglepootin. Although, where is that, sketch comedians of the world?
Moskidanya, even.
First of all, this is the same voice actor. So it's Dawes Butler.
Yep.
It's the same voice actor, and he does many voices. So it's not just like this is the only voice he can do, but he purposely did the Snagglepuss voice, which is why they gave him the same catchphrase.
Yes.
But that's bad.
That is not a good thing.
Saying it's great or even good, even.
It's like if he fucking, Han Solo shows up on screen. He's like, I'm an archaeologist. No, man, we know it's you. We know you're only doing the same character, but you don't have to like put a fucking bell on it.
Yeah. In Air Force One, if he was to, you know, get hijacked and then he's just like snakes, why did it have to be snakes on this plane? You could have done a lot with that, quite honestly, now that I think about it.
They did make an entire movie out of it.
It's a good movie. I right off the gate, I'm like, okay, win me over, Funky Phantom. And I get ripoff Scooby-Doo teenage characters who also are really annoying. Like, they don't get along. Like, there's like playful banter. And then there's legitimately, I think these people are trying to kill each other banter.
That was so weird. And
Scooby-Doo is more charming. But Skip is voiced by Mickey Dolenz of the Monkees.
Yeah, amazing.
It should
also
be
Elmo the dog is Don Messick, aka the voice of Scooby Doo. Yeah.
Don Messick.
He wasn't all like "Ruh-roh, Rudy."
Here's the thing:
professional.
This is what I will say. At first, it annoyed me. But then I came around to it. The ghost who's afraid of everything is a fun this plus that in the world of sketch comedy, where you take an unlikely thing and like a lifeguard who's afraid of water, waiter nauseated by food, ghost who's afraid of everything.
I wanted to like it. I feel like that failed in execution rather than premise.
I'm going to be honest. I thought we had watched this before because we've definitely watched several Scooby-Doo ripoffs.
Yes,
so
that's fair.
There one called like Crime Club or something?
Wasn't that the Australian live action show?
God, I don't even remember. But while I was watching this, I was like, we have seen this before, haven't we? Like, and then I realized, like, I think it was a different Scooby-Doo ripoff.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. We should go to the spreadsheet that I'm sure Chan has been immaculately keeping.
Well, I was thinking to myself, this is a Scooby-Doo ripoff, but at least it's not as racist as Scooby-Doo. And then I remembered everything that happened in this episode. And I'm like, oh, wait, never mind.
First of all, Scooby-Doo gave a voice to the Harlem Globetrotters when no one else would, sir.
Oh, yeah. They were never booking until Scooby-Doo came around.
I did honestly deliberately pick this one in hopes that it would be super racist. It was, and by that metric, that's the thing. It's like I came in like, whoo, we're going to stink up the joint with racism. And it was pretty mellow. Like,
yeah, I don't recall any racism, to be honest.
It was regular 1970s racist in that if you are in South America and you're Montezuma, you're a big scary monster. There's no depth to any of this, you know.
That I think that's a reach because this is literally just like, hey, there's a dead guy and his ghost is here. There's nothing there, like saying like, oh, they made Montezuma a scary. That's like saying like, oh, they made a ghost scary.
You guys, you say it's dog whistle racism, but I don't hear it.
Listen, I just think you're trying to get some. You're trying to get some brownie points. But
wow, Gina, really?
That's what just happened. Points,
that's what just happened
for being anti-racist, huh? So I guess only us brownies can see race. Gina,
saying is that if Chan doesn't call it racist first, you can't then call it racist because you're probably wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I am here to be that benchmark, and if I don't think it's racist, I mean, I will stretch to make something racist, and I'm not really picking it up from this one. So
there you go.
Like I said, mark from that. And this is why I say it's just run of the mill 1970s racism. It's standardized racism. They didn't go extra like that Chinese restaurant episode of Scooby-Doo did.
Are you saying Chan can't recognize regular racism? Wow.
This is very problematic, Ray.
You know what? I said what I said and I'm going to stick by it.
Since we're right at the beginning, I just want to take moment
feel
to
like
call out my delightful Adobe transcription machine. Okay. Transcription.
Love it.
This is how it translates the opening theme song. And honestly, I would listen to this song if these were the lyrics, and it feels like, I don't know, like maybe a Nick Cave song or like some Bauhaus or something.
Nick Cage, Chan. It's Cage.
God damn it. Lost out in a storm, we ran inside a spooky husband, hoping to get busted. But as the cops said first, we knew that it was wrong.
Honestly, when that kind of sounds like that page from BOC's book that we had to do an extra podcast
that's
on.
True. Now, are you going to play the actual theme song?
I'm not done yet.
Excuse me.
Set the hand to try to get the ball. No, this spirit. I believe some of the things I just heard. We found a plan. Bang, 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 bang. Bang, bang, innate in love and momentum, and you can't do without that, can get better, known as Funky Valentine. Well, that's it. That's
it. I was waiting for Vincent Price to show up, quite honestly. That was, something.
I feel like I was possessed by the spirit, the great spirit of
it's pretty good. It's
the
pretty
man. Good.
I like it. Can we hear a little bit of this Funky Phantom theme song? It's existing.
Terrible.
Lost out in a storm, we went inside a spooky house just hoping to get warm. The dusty clock said 6:30, we knew that it was wrong. When we set the hands to 12, the clock began to fall.
It's a Funky Phantom!
The spirit of 1776 people!
your service.
We found a friend in Funky Santa. You'll pop right in just when you need him most. And so will too, and you can do without us. The cat and the Funky Phantom Ghost.
It's Funky Phantom.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Did he just say it's funky fan time?
No.
It did sound like that. Yes.
You're telling me that you didn't find that song funky?
Funky.
Tina, don't even joke about that. Yeah. Do not even joke. This is 1971 when funk meant something.
Yeah.
You all say that this is funky.
And not just funk and wagonals. We're talking Bootsy Collins here.
Honestly, I can't even be mad at that one because I'm just impressed that you know what Funkin' Wagnalls is.
I got a long story about Funkin' Wagnalls. I will not be sharing on the show because I can't imagine anyone would be interested. If you're interested in my Funkin' Wagnalls story, hit us up at G.I. Joe Podcast on Twitter and just rewrite hashtag Ray's Funkin' Wagnalls story. If anybody gives it, okay, if two people do it, I'll tell it next week.
Why?
Wait, I have a question. Did we all immediately forget to do our review of the G.I. Joe game that 2 seconds before we started, we said, let's start with that?
As soon as I did the hashtag, I realized we never did it. Yes. let's take a break in the action and talk about it.
Yeah, let's.
Oh, I thought you were going to put a commercial here, so that's why I was waiting.
Okay, everybody, commercial break right now. And we're back. Let's see if I put anything there. Apparently I didn't last week. Don't worry about that. 2 weeks ago, who even knows what's going on at this point? The point I'm trying to make here is that the hosts of Knowing Is Half the Podcast, Robert Clark Chan and Gina Ippolito, if you didn't know their names because they refused to say them at the top of the show, and myself and my lovely wife, Melissa Oki, we all played G.I. Joe Mission Critical, the board game with miniatures, and I'll go last. You guys, how was it for you?
It was actually enjoyable. I liked it. why are you laughing?
Because it was enjoyable. We had a grand old time. But
yeah, I like board games.
I like that you can't even just bring yourself to be excited. You just said it was actually enjoyable. Like, look, someone is under the table punching you in the nuts, making you say that.
I mean, the fact that I have a 5-year-old who is constantly trying to escape his bedtime and could legitimately be under the desk right now punching me in the balls aside, yes, I do manage to get a little bit of enjoyment here.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I never played a full through game before. And really quick, everybody, I got to play. It's a co-op game. So all of us played together as members of the Joe team. And there's this little map, this little board, and Cobra Troopers and the characters keep popping up and you got to go fight them and defeat them and kind of keep the tide from rising until eventually Cobra Commander shows up. Then you got to go kick his ass a couple of times to win the game. That's the general gist of it. And I really did enjoy it. We used some expansions in there. And so I personally played as Sergeant Slaughter. Melissa played as Jinx, the blind ninja, which is great because Jinx exists in G.I. Joe Sigma 6. So it's current. You all want to say who you played?
Current as in 2006 current?
Yeah, current as in where we are currently in the G.I. Joe timeline on this show current.
That's not a very useful metric.
I played as Mutt and Junkyard.
That's right.
I was Snake Eyes.
So it was really big toss up whether Gina would play one of the lady characters, but I know she, if Lady J was there, if we had bought the Lady J expansion, I think maybe she would have gone for it. But Gina was not taking Scarlet or Cover Girl or Bombstrike, whoever the heck that is.
I don't know who Bombstrike is. If there was a Baroness, I would have gone with her. I would have even gone with what's her butt? What's his butt's sister?
I know who you're talking about, but I'm not going to help you out on this.
I don't need help. Everyone knows who I'm talking about.
I will. Well, yeah.
You mean Destro's other girlfriend.
Except for Ray.
Jesus Christ, Ray.
That took me a sec because you were talking about Cobras, and my brain was only going towards Joes, the actual people you play as in this game.
I literally had just said I would play as the Baroness.
I know, and I didn't like that either.
The only thing that disappoints me is that you can only play as Joes and not as Cobras, which understandable, completely understandable. But I still want to play, you know, fucking Tomax and Zaymont. So,
well, sure.
Yeah.
Come when that expansion, the Extensive Enterprises expansion, comes out. You know, this game, and to be fair, I didn't say this before, there's a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers game that uses the same rule set that you can mix and match with this one. So if you wanted to mix and match between the two, yeah, I didn't get as excited, but I'm hoping and I believe they're going to do a Transformers version of this game.
Okay.
And then you can mix and match in some Decepticons, and that might be super fun.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
Anyway.
Get a He-Man expansion pack in there, and then I'm on board.
Okay. I think they're going to stick to Hasbro properties, so you might get a Mask.
Stupid.
Or My Little Pony. Or Gem in the Holograms. I don't know how it works, but let's do it.
You know what? Yeah. If you want to bring in Gem in the Holograms, I'm all about it.
I'm not even kidding. Unironically, if they did a Gem in the Holograms expansion for Mission Critical, I would buy it in roughly 3.2 seconds.
Yep.
There is a Ninja expansion I bought. That's how we got Mutt and Junkyard somehow. And
that's
Jinx.
How that works.
There's also Ninjas, so you could replace one of your main. Anyway, it's a delightful game. We defeated Cobra Commander on the fourth turn. I thought we did a great job. I thought our teamwork was good, and it's a little bit of a learning curve to it, but I thought people generally, except for Gina Ippolito, picked it up pretty quickly,
yeah,
and were flying after turn one.
I need to be told what to do at all times, like a sassy baby.
And when Gina says told what to do at all times, she means repeatedly the same things over and over again. We pointed out to Gina that there were numbers on the cards, which represented how much energy it took to play them. And there were shields on the cards, which represented their defensive value. And I'm still not sure Gina understands that those two things are different.
Look, don't put two things on one card. How hard is that?
Oh, my God. Two things on one card? Outrageous.
In addition to, like, what the card is telling you to do.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, you just ate a big bowl of spaghetti. Move back two spaces because you're real full. And also, here's a bunch of shields that mean nothing and a number that means nothing. Too much on one card.
What? Yeah. What? Is there a spaghetti expansion?
But I didn't want to talk about it. There's a Chuck E. Cheese expansion.
Is somebody getting spaghetti from Chuck E. Cheese?
Pasquale. Yeah, Pasquale will do spaghetti. He is a roughly Italian man.
It's a goddamn crapshoot getting pizza from Chuck E. Cheese pizza. I don't think we want to be delving into the world of pasta.
I'm going to say right now, I'd
eat spaghetti from Chuck E. Cheese. I'd eat spaghetti from anywhere.
I've done the salad bar at Chuck E. Cheese and lived to tell the story. So
I'd do the salad bar.
Yeah, it wasn't that great, but I enjoyed it. Yes, so G.I. Joe Mission Critical from Renegade Games. If you like G.I. Joe stuff, they're not paying us to say this. I'll say it. I just did their Kickstarter. And I've been wanting to play it for like all year, and I finally made it happen. So I'm excited. I'm so happy they liked it. We might do it again at some point. Maybe, you know, I'd love to set up cameras and do like a live stream on Twitch, but that would require much more work.
I want to play that Batman AR game you have.
I want to play my Batman game.
Gina, nobody wants to play your Batman game. Everybody wants to play the AR game that I got free from the Who Would Win show. Anyway, back to Funky Phantom. So they drive around not in the Mystery Machine, but the Looney Dooney Dune Buggy, y'all.
It's pretty stupid.
I dearly miss from the 70s is our collective fascination with Dune Buggies. I do not even understand what they were for.
Sand.
Driving in the dunes.
None of them look like they actually work on sand is the problem.
See, and this is my problem with fake Dune fans like Robert Clark Chan. You claim to like Frank Herbert's work, but you're not into Dune buggies.
No, I'm saying that I do like Dune buggies. Also, I will fight you for even suggesting that I am a fake Dune fan. Also, I'll fight you just because you're Ray Stakatus.
You'd win that fight. That's the most upsetting part.
You know what I miss is like there was a time where people were like, hey, what kind of vehicle do you drive? And the answer was a weird one. Like, people just had weird vans, weird things. I miss that. I realize that now we're a little more gas conscious, so not everyone is driving around in a mystery machine that's been painted green. But I want more weird vehicles.
See, you know what? I would agree, because we got a new car semi-recently, and owing to the pandemic, which screwed up all the supply lines, basically, like, your choice is a white car.
Yeah.
It's a car. It's the basic model. If you want anything else, it's going to cost you an extra $12,000. So here you go, man.
Yeah, I want to just buy a weird van that has like an alligator holding a bowl of spaghetti on the side.
God damn it. Get that painted on.
I want it to cost like $200. I want there to be just like weird 70s shit in them. And I want to drive around and solve crimes.
Do you know how to fix a car? Because you can get something like that and it will break down approximately every half block.
No, but I assume that one of my sidekicks does.
Look at your sidekicks. Look at the sidekicks you have now.
Not you. I would diversify. Either of us look like
we know diverse. You're not going to get any more diverse than me, Gina Ippolito. I'll tell you that.
I mean, that's a fair point.
I want like one sidekick who like really knows how to make food in a hot pot in the back of a van. I want one that knows how to fix crap. I want one who's always got a guy. Like, but that's called being Italian. Like, you've always got a guy for something.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And
yep,
that's pretty much it. That's what I need in my van crew.
We are going to need some of the Knowing as Half the Podcast fans out there to get us artwork of Gina's van. She's been very clear what she wants on it. Make it happen.
Or you know what? Also tell us who would be in your van crew. What kind of weirdos?
You could do that, but none of you, frankly, are interesting enough for me to care. I'm not going to get back on Twitter for that.
I mean, you're not wrong. Anyway, let's go ahead and start the episode, because one of the things I noticed about the Looney Dooney dune buggy is that there are no like windshields, there is no protective area, and they're driving around the Mexico deserts.
You don't know what a dune buggy looks like?
That's what a dune buggy looks like.
There would be something to protect you from the dunes. This seems like poor design to me.
Now you gotta wear goggles.
Everything in the 70s was poorly designed. That's what makes it awesome.
Yeah, okay. Well, they say it's too dry driving through Mexico with no windshield. Wow. How'd that happen? And this is when I realized immediately, this might be some of the cheapest animation I've ever seen in my entire life.
No, you forgot. They didn't even, like,
finish eyes, you know? Like, no, I don't even know.
They did that a lot, but I think you've forgotten a lot of the animation that we've seen, because this was on par with, like, a lot of 70s stuff.
This is basic 70s Hanna-Barbera. Yeah, we've gone so much lower than this.
I feel like the Scooby-Doo from 2 years earlier crushes what they tried to do here. I feel like they got very lazy and very cheap in their choices here.
Yeah, because it's a knockoff. They're going to put all the money into the flagship product, and you're just going to get like, fuck it, whatever. The kids don't give a shit for this
also,
one.
Also, that whole like eye thing was very common, where they were like the same color as the flesh.
I didn't like it. I just this is a ripoff. Try to convince me it's not a ripoff. One way to do it is not cheap out on the animation. That's what I'm trying to say. I did not care for it at all.
Ain't nobody trying to convince anybody. They're just putting it out there because they know dumbass kids are just going to watch whatever's on Saturday morning.
Apparently they won't, because this only lasted like half of one season. This is the era where they would make 65 episodes a season. This only made it 17 episodes of one season, which means very quickly they pulled the plug on this nonsense.
Well, that's because they had a serialized story to tell, and by the end of it, it turns out that they managed to keep the wormhole open and establish a gateway to the Delta Quadrant, like a staple.
Wow. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I gotta say, the title of this episode, not having anything to do with a dune buggy race, Montezuma, or anything, and just the episode being titled Spirit Spooked, really lazy writing.
Well, to be fair, the spirit was spooked all throughout the episode.
Is every episode titled that? Because his whole thing is he's spooked all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, the idea of a ghost who's afraid of death is a strange marble to snap.
No, that's what I said before. It's a this plus that you learn about in an Eric Moneypenny's sketch class. That aspect of it I liked.
Look, Eric Moneypenny, very talented, great improviser. But that being said, this is an avenue I did not care for. I didn't
Chan
care for
liked it.
Improviser.
Chan did not care for it either, just for the record. Chan's on the record saying, I don't like this. I asked him before I put my opinion out
there.
Because they're Gina and Chan versus Ray episodes.
Yeah, but I'm saying this aspect of it. Ghost Who's Afraid, Chan?
My opinion is Eric Moneypenny is a fantastic comedic writer.
He's really good.
If he says something, it's true.
Okay, here's the deal. Hit up Eric Moneypenny on Facebook Messenger right now. Ask him if the concept of Funky Pharaoh meets his standards.
Oh, God, please. First of all, don't do that because
I'm asking you to do it right now, Gina. Please.
Someone is going to take that seriously.
Tell you what, take Moneypenny's pack class. He often does it online.
Okay.
And you can
okay.
ask him at the end.
Yeah. Make sure you're paying him money in some way in order to ask this question. That makes it much more appropriate. That's, you know what? That's a good call, Chan. I'm on board.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah, thank you.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Can you keep a secret? Good. Then come closer. This is Baby Secrets. She talks.
For a secret, touch my heart.
And she whispers.
Baby Secrets loves you.
I love you, Baby Secrets.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Baby Secrets, her secrets are just for you.
You're my best friend.
Your secret friend.
Baby Secrets, secrets just for you.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
The ghost is covered in dust and then dematerializes so the dust falls to the ground and then rematerializes. I kind of liked it. I kind of like that. I like that's problem solving. I'm into it.
Yeah, I'd do that if I accidentally got covered in glitter.
It's a bit that clearly is a standard bit they do. And I feel, again, just sort of like the execution of it is a little weird. Like the premise of it, him being able to act upon the material corporeal plane makes sense. Cause I mean, obviously, you know, you got to do what you got to do to tell a story in a cartoon. But like they do it a weird number of times. I think it happens 3 times and it doesn't heighten at all. It's just sort of like he does it once here and he does it again to like get through a wall or something like that. It just didn't. I did not like it. I did not like it.
You didn't like this bit? This bit's the only thing I liked in the entire episode. Now I'm upset with you.
Well, that's to be expected.
Yeah, that means you're doing it right. All right. So they're dead last in a race, or so they think. They are struggling in this Mexico cross-country dune buggy race. Apparently, they are also race car drivers. I've never seen a race that involved an entire team of people together in a dune buggy. Maybe this is a thing in the 70s I just don't know about.
You've never seen Cannonball Run, man?
Oh, I don't want to see Cannonball Run. I bet it's not very good. Is Cannonball Run any good?
I really need to know now if this is a bit or not.
We've established that Ray is
never doing a bit when he's being stupid.
Yeah, Chan, when will you learn?
Cannonball Run.
He's doing a bit is when he's trying desperately to do a bit and ends up making dad jokes. But anytime he's like saying something that seems too stupid for anyone to say, it's not a bit. And I guarantee you, we will keep asking, is this a bit? Because sometimes it's just insane.
Well, Cannonball Run got 29% on Rotten Tomatoes, but 91% of Google users liked it, which tells me it's garbage.
It is very much of its time. If you want to see, believe Jackie Chan's first role in America.
That's what I'm noticing. Also with Roger Moore and the entire Rat Pack and Burt Reynolds and Farrah Fawcett and Dom DeLuise. This is a star-studded cast, ladies and gentlemen.
This is what I'm saying. I'm saying that you, Ray Stakanis, need to watch this movie.
Bradshaw, ladies and gentlemen. Wow. Here's the deal.
Ray, I'm just curious. Who do you think is in the Rat Pack?
Look, I said Brat Pack, which is the Coreys, and that all came in the 1980s.
Yeah, yeah. I understand that you're talking about the Rat Pack. Who do you think is in the Rat Pack?
Well, he is correct in that one member of the Rat Pack is in this movie.
There's multiple. I'm going to say right now, there are multiple Rat Packs in this movie because you got Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr.
Dean Martin is in this. Okay. You do have
two. All right.
Okay.
That's fair. I stand corrected. You did, though, say every single member of the Rat Pack.
And I'm like, I saw the first in there. Two were the first two I saw, so I just assumed the rest would follow suit, and I was wrong. I was dead wrong. But Frank Sinatra, also in the Rat Pack, and I'm sure somebody else.
I was asking because you said it right after you said Roger Moore. You said Roger Moore and every member of the Rat Pack, and then for a second I was worried that you thought Roger Moore was in the Rat Pack.
Let me tell you right now, if Roger Moore and Jackie Chan were actual members of the Rat Pack, those movies go through the roof of watchability.
Okay? That would be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad job, Hollywood.
Jackie Chan would have been like 2 or like -4 when the Rat Pack movies came out, but other than that.
What I love is now on Google.com, Jackie Chan now gets third billing for this movie, despite the fact his character's name is Subaru Driver Number 1.
He has no English lines, and he is on screen for a total of about 40 seconds.
Non sequitur, speaking of Asian actors who don't get their due, tonight when we're recording this, is the season premiere of season 2 of Loki. And let me tell you, if you have any positive feelings towards Ki-Hui Kwan, you should watch it 90 times over.
Wait, are you referring to Ki-Hui Kwan as somebody who Hollywood has not rewarded? The guy who just won an Oscar?
I believe I said underappreciated because he spent roughly 35 years not being able to get a job, which he talks about constantly. So
he does.
Well, but he is so funny in it. It makes me want to die.
I'm glad he's getting work. That's the
guy
who deserves
it. Can we be done with this goddamn thing now so I can go watch Loki?
I want you to watch it and then tell me how much you love him. And if you don't love him, don't tell me, Chan, because I can't handle your Chan-ness.
I'm not even to the act 1 act break yet, Chan. So if y'all would just let me get moving.
I mean, we could sum this up in 3 sentences if we really wanted to, because there ain't much happening here, guys.
No, I got a lot of notes.
Before we get there, before we continue on, I just need somebody to make a t-shirt that says, I can't handle your Chan-ness. If you
That's
please.
A good one. That's a good one.
Because
when we do Knowing Is Half the Podcast Con in about 25 years, big seller.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you have to buy one to get in the door. They just give them away with admission.
Mm-hmm.
I figure. So there's one car behind them. They decide to follow that one car. They're off the beaten path. That'll be important for the plot later, such as it is. That car.
Yeah, there's some business, and because like right off the bat, like my second note after the ghost is fucking snaggle Putin, is I hate these kids already. They're really mean. Like they're genuinely mean to
each
other.
They're mean. I don't like it.
One of them's like, yeah, we're fucking lost because you took us on the shortcut like you always do. I'm like, all right, well that's a character trait that has been gifted to this one character. And then like 2 minutes later, they're like, oh, I got this shortcut that I'm going to take. I'm like, that's the other guy. Why does that guy now have a shortcut that's going to get them lost when they've already established it's the big doofy guy who has the shortcut thing? what is going on? Like, they just do not care.
They do not. Nobody cares. I don't know why we care as much as we do. Montezuma shows up, though, when this other car has a flame out. And Montezuma wants them to go. He wants them to get out of there. And he disappears. He teleports away. And now that I think about it, that is never explained.
They do. They mention at the end, a bunch of magician tricks. Because I was waiting for that explanation, too.
Oh, really? Okay, I missed that then. Okay. Great writing, Funky Phantom. So I just wrote here, we've been over it already, but why is the ghost afraid? I don't... We've beaten it to death. You've already reached out.
Do you seriously not get how comedy works? Like, I understand if it's a bit that you don't like, but do you not understand how comedy works?
No, I understand, like, hat in a hat and opposites in the same character. I understand person has job, is bad at that job. But just on a fundamental level, he's intangible. He can disappear from reality whenever he wants to. I do not understand this character trait. I'm frustrated by it. I do not find it amusing.
Okay, look, I need to know if he can become intangible, come in and out of reality at will, why he's in fucking shotgun. At the very least, you put him in the goddamn back seat.
Yes, you do.
Why are there two humans in the back seat when one of them could, like, actually be comfortable?
Don't they put Miss Lady Pants in the back seat, though, so the guy's, like, backing on her? I assume that was what was going on there.
Oh, is that what? No, because his dog is there, too. And you can't...
Yeah,
you
but can't he's in the middle. Dog. Okay. Brutus is in the middle, or Bluto's in the middle. And he's crushing Blondie Pants, who is drawn very grossly.
Yo, can we talk about her fucking Voldemort nose?
Yeah, she does not have a nose. Ooh. She has two nostrils, and like, she's done.
The idea is like, she's got a cute little button nose, but they don't bother with any shading, so it's just two slits, and it's creepy as fuck. And her eyes are like dead snake eyes.
Everything about it is upsetting to me, but you knew that already. She is meant to be the very attractive member to keep people watching, but she is bad looking. And I don't like to criticize people's looks, but she's a cartoon.
I do appreciate the fact that she's not stupid. Like she's not ditzy at all. She just seems equally as capable as the dudes. More so in some contexts, but they don't. I like the fact that they're both not making her Penny, where it's like, she's the only competent one, but everyone ignores her. But they're also not making her like a ditz who doesn't know what's going on. She's just like a regular character.
I wish they would make her Penny. It would give her something to do. The only thing she does is be there to chastise people when there's only, you know, she's here to both sides, the two terrible men, and she's here to get kidnapped. She's here for two things, and both of them are bad.
I have no notes for this.
Yeah. Thank you. So also we get in there, the ghost disappears. And so we cut to, for like 45 seconds, we cut to Elmo the dog doing this bizarre bit with the mirror where he's looking at himself in the mirror and checking his eyeballs. And then the ghost cat, Boo, appears in the mirror and then hits him. I don't know what's happening.
He's clearly trying to check if his eyes look bloodshot and if he's too drunk to drive, so that if he gets pulled over when he's been drinking, will the cops know that he's drunk?
In the backseat. What are we talking about right now?
The slapstick relationship between the big dog and the ghost cat is also like inherently mean. In the same way that the human's relationship is, like the cat's just fucking with him, and it's not funny. It's
not.
I admit that, like, the meanness of the, I guess it's the Mickey Dolenz character, the redheaded dude, is really weird. Like, he seems like he's written as if he's their antagonistic bully in like a rival group, but they're supposed to be friends. So every time he's like, ha ha ha, you idiot, you hurt yourself, you stupid moron, go kill yourself. It's like, wait, what's, how do these people know each other? Are they friends? What's going on?
Wikipedia says they're best friends.
Yeah, it's very, it's a very strange, like maybe the only thing I can think is that there was like a first draft of this where it was really too much like Scooby-Doo. And they were like, okay, we can't, you know, like, because like, Shaggy and what's his name? Blaine, whatever the white preppy guy's name is.
Augie. His name
no, is no, Augie. I mean on Scooby-Doo.
Oh, Blaine.
Fred. Like, Fred never insults anyone in the group. He's like a true leader. He's like a true leader.
Yeah.
Shaggy's never mean. Like, none of them are ever mean. So maybe the network was like, differentiate it from Scooby-Doo a little bit. And they were like, what if we just make them all mean to each other?
What if they're all assholes?
What a terrible, terrible decision that was.
Yeah, everything about it's very, very upsetting.
Strange choice in a kid's cartoon too. It's just a real strange choice.
And I like how you called the redhead the mean one, as if Augie, the giant brown-haired bully, isn't obviously the instigator of all things.
I mean, I thought it was the redhead that was like calling people idiots.
Yeah. Augie's the one actually physically assaulting people. That's all I'm trying to say.
But Chan, you're with me that the redhead is the one that's like laughing at people and calling them stupid idiots.
No, they're both doing it to each other. That's what I hate about it.
Not like, ideal.
Like, why are they together? Because they hate each other clearly.
And for the record, I hated the dog mirror cat bit as well. I just wrote here, I don't get it. I don't get why this is supposed to be funny. The dog is doing weird things, and then the cat appears in the mirror, and then
weren't you the one? What do you mean you hate it as well? You were the one who started this conversation out by saying, I hate it.
Oh, because Chan, I started by saying what it was. Chan said he hated it. I agree. I was trying to be neutral. Maybe my lack of neutrality shined through.
No, you literally said, I don't get it. I don't understand what it's supposed to be. And then I said, I made a stupid joke about how he's drunk and he wants to drive home.
Listen, I still don't get it.
I think are you drunk tonight? You're repeating yourself a lot.
I'm very wasted. I had to be in order to get through this recording. The
fair.
Road is suddenly bad now. Why is the road bad? I don't know. They give up on it 5 seconds
later.
It's
not a road. It's a dune.
They took a shortcut.
It's bad now, and we're going to go explore.
Also, it's a dune, so they have to drive without rhythm. That's a very funny joke for people who are big fans of Dune, like I am.
But I was of the impression that you were not a big fan of Dune.
You can go to hell.
Now, okay, this is what I was getting at a moment ago, because Augie the bully is picking on redheaded kid. Maybe this is too personal. But... He's name calling him. Then he tries to like physically assault him. And that's when Lady Pants turns around and says, now cool it, you two. And can we play this clip? Actually, I would like you to hear the entirety of it because there is one instigator and one victim. This is media both sidesing. And this is why politics has gone to hell.
Hang on, Elmo. We're coming down to help you. After you, Skip. No, after you. Brawn before brains, you know. Yeah!
That is a point where the big guy tries to shove the little guy down a hill.
Uh-huh.
The little guy dodges, and the big guy goes ass over tea kettle down.
Yeah, I do not find any of it fun. In fact, he destroys a vase. That's outside of the temple, so we're encroaching on G.I. Joe territory now with respect to ancient landmarks.
Weird.
And there's a sequence on a bridge between Elmo the dog and the ghost cat that I do not find amusing in the slightest.
Yeah, that's what I mean, is it's like not fun. The cat is like trying to kill the dog, and then like the bridge breaks and the dog falls, you know, he doesn't die, but like, why?
Let me tell you, funny? This is the exact reason I do not like the British Office. There is one character who has a lot of power, and that is the Ricky Gervais character. There is one character who has no power, and it is Martin Freeman's character. And the entirety of the British Office is the guy with power shitting on the guy with no power, and the guy with no power never getting over. And Ricky Gervais always winning, and it's very unfun to watch. I remember seeing a later episode when Ricky Gervais as a friend joined the firm, and the episode ends with like one of Martin Freeman's shoes getting thrown on the roof and the villains running away laughing. And I just say to myself, fuck this show. This
so
is
you
not
don't watch
fun.
Much British this comedy, do funny. You, Ray?
I watch Fawlty Towers. I watch
Fawlty
Monty
Towers
Python.
Is literally all about people shitting on each other. His wife is shitting on him. He's shitting on what's his name? The waiter guy.
Manuel.
Yeah.
Manuel.
Yeah, but at least John Cleese is getting shit on. Who's shitting on Ricky Gervais? He has all the power and never loses. Even in the finale of season one, he literally says, close the entire office as long as I get a job. Isn't this hilarious? No, this is abusive is what this is.
As long as we're talking about British comedies, can I just say Upstart Crow is a delight?
I've never heard of that.
It's the guy from Mitchell and Webb. I think it's Mitchell. Shakespeare.
Oh, written by Ben Elton of Blackadder. Yeah,
yep,
I'm in.
Yep, good stuff. And anyway, somebody was saying,
I want to see this. No, my whole point in all of this is that the British Office is maybe the most overrated piece of garbage. The American Office is 1,000 times better because Michael Scott actually takes L's at some point during the show repeatedly as he deserves to. Why Ricky Gervais wrote himself in the show as Hulk Hogan, who's incapable of losing at any point, is ridiculously upsetting to me and makes the show unwatchable. Hey, do you like bullies bullying people that they have all the power over and never getting their comeuppance? Have I got a show for you? Awful.
I stopped listening to you a half hour ago.
You know I stopped what? Listening, but that's because I actually agree with Ray, and that is disturbing to me.
Whoa! Here's the deal. You take the dubs when you can get it. Gina, that's a dub as well. Usually you tune out at the intro.
You're doing pretty well today.
Yeah, this is actually a good one for me. We find Professor Lundgren, who says he found Montezuma's Mask of the Sun, and they go to a temple.
Oh, hey, before we even get there, just need to check this point that is entirely visual. So hopefully we remember to post the screenshot. But if not, just go find this episode of Funky Phantom. Sure, I think we got it on Daily Motion. And go to 5 minutes and 5 seconds to see a shot of a ghost showing off his chocolate starfish. Very clearly, that's what the animators drew. The censors were like, just erase the butthole, would you please?
No.
So they do, but it's straight up ghost asshole right there.
Chan, have you never seen a cartoon? Like, this is a well-known bit, like where someone lands on a cactus or something. Mm-hmm. It happens in so many cartoons. Yep. And for some reason, a ghost's pantaloons is offensive to old man Chan over here.
It's not offensive. He is practically twerking because they stay on his ass and the cat slowly enjoying the pain.
Again, well-known bit.
Beetles. For a minute and a half, and it gets to be weird.
I feel like what happened to Wile E. Coyote all the time.
It also
happened to the Grinch at some point.
It goes from the Stooges to a David Lynch film in the way they just linger on it. It just stays. And you're like, well, this was kind of funny at first, and now I'm I'm weirdly disturbed and possibly aroused. Not sure. Maybe that was just me.
Damn it. Now I'm agreeing with Chan. I don't like where we're going here.
This is not
good. Why don't you guys just make out?
This might be the show that ruins the show.
Look, I told you a Gina versus Ray and Chan episode, nobody wins. This is hashtag nobody wins, Chan.
Hashtag who would win? Nobody.
Nobody. We find a Professor Lundgren who says, I had a mask of the sun from Montezuma. I called the university and they were supposed to send somebody out, except no, that didn't happen. A spirit then shows up and steals the mask and then vanishes. And this is where, in true choose your own adventure book style, our heroes have a choice. Do we take Professor Lundgren to the police, or do we go off and try to find help? By the way, where is the missing driver? These are all hooks.
Oh, yeah. We didn't mention that there's a driver who's like, go back. The way is dangerous. And then like, poof, he disappears just like Montezuma did.
Yeah.
Weird.
Surprise. He might come into play later. So the spirit himself has plans. The professor has now vanished. April has now been abducted in true Night Trap, the Sega Saturn game. Sega CD game.
Is that what a Stegosaurus plays? A Stega Saturn?
It's an early CD-ROM game called Night Trap, and it's the one that hit Congress as being too violent. And if you watch, listen, do you guys know about Night Trap? Night Trap was an old video game from the 90s that was a full motion video, FMV game, where essentially you were playing security camera with six like cameras at the same time, and you were switching between them to find the evil monsters who were trying to invade the sorority house and abduct and kill the sorority girls. Except it's the cheapest video game ever made. And it had like one sort of famous sitcom lady in it whose name I forget. And it was considered too brutal for the 1990s, around the time that Mortal Kombat was making a big deal. Night Trap. Anyway, it's a Night Trap trap where a wall opens and a guy grabs her by the mouth and waist, pulls her inside, and then next thing you know, they're on the roof of a ziggurat. Wow.
Wow, indeed.
She must face the wrath of Montezuma with the trial of the sun god, which near as I can tell is a giant magnifying glass, and the sun will burn her if they don't do something.
Yeah.
So the Phantom is going to take care of it. He does so by teleporting himself to the roof, something that probably he should have been taking advantage of earlier, and he hits the Montezuma character with a gong.
I was really hoping you were just going to do another yeah, Chan.
I'll keep advancing. This is my listen, I hope this is a recurring bit because this allows me to advance the plot in a terrible cartoon in a very expedient way.
I said this was fine because it's a nothing burger of a thing, and like I have no reaction to any of it. It didn't make me angry like some other cartoons have, but it this is why I said it was fine.
And that's why I dislike it intensely, because there's nothing there and there are some things that are exceedingly bad. Like there's no bright spot. There's no like, oh yeah, but there's this one joke. Like the closest it gets to actual humor is the section you're talking about, where there's this giant gong behind Montezuma and Mudsy. Just real quick, the guy's name is Mudsy.
Mudsy Bogues.
Huh?
Mudsy Bogues.
Yes. He's a small basketball player.
No, I want to pause for a moment. Gina, exceptional job. I was not expecting you to hit me with a 1990s NBA reference, but I am eagerly here for it.
There's a 100% chance that Tiny Gina knows of Mudsy Bogues the 5'6" NBA player.
Listen, every okay, Gina, I can name. I can
Gina,
name.
Hold on. I want to say this. Who is the 5'7" NBA player who won the slam dunk contest?
I do know this. But I think like there was like it was like Miss Spud Webb.
Spud Webb is correct. Ladies and gentlemen, Gina hit us with not one, but two sports references tonight, and that's I honestly, could not be happier.
Honestly, here's the thing. Impressive.
This is what I will say to you. I can name about 10 players from every sport that counts if they were playing in the 80s and or 90s. I am confident in that. I can do it with basketball. I can do it with football. I can...
Okay, I'm going to do it. Gina, can you name for me one player from the Detroit Red Wings hockey team?
That's not a sport that counts.
That is one of the big four. That is a sport that counts, especially in the 80s and 90s. It counted more there than it does now.
No.
Can you name me one Stanley? They won 5 Stanley Cups.
Hockey is not, when I say a sport that counts.
Disappointed.
I'm talking about American, not Canadian.
I'm disappointed.
This is like saying like, hey, you know how during the Cold War there were 4 major superpowers. Why don't you name 3 and 4? No, because they don't exist.
Listen, there's a big for the longest time until hockey went off ESPN and thus disappeared.
No,
hockey in the
knows,
80s and 90s was a big deal.
If you say a sport that counts, you're talking about football, basketball, baseball.
Okay, hold on then. Let me do this then. Gina, TV's Gina Ippolito, can you name me one member of the Detroit Pistons Bad Boys championship team of the NBA, a big three, a thing you say admits in the 80s and 90s?
No, what I said was I can name 10 people in each sport that counts. Okay. I literally said this.
Gina, name 10 NBA players. One of them might be a bad boy from the Detroit Pistons championship team.
No, see,
of the
you're
80s
saying
and
specific
90s.
Teams, but I never said I could do that. I said I could name. You're obviously talking about Dennis Rodman, but.
Okay, you did it. Ladies and gentlemen, there it is. I knew you would get there.
I could name just 10 in any sport. Like if you were like, hey, what's Dan Marino doing, for example? Or what's Larry Bird doing, for example? Like, I can name 10, but when you're giving me specific things, that's not what I said. That's like me saying like, hey, I like chocolate, and you being like, touch someone's butthole. It's totally different.
Gina, take the dub. You won.
Hey, gang, I just came back. I turned off my mic and went to go eat a big bowl of curry. Did I miss anything?
No.
No.
But... listen, I challenged Gina. She won and then got mad at me. And
because
I'm fine with that. Because she won.
Why are we still talking about this?
I can't. Like, you had it the whole time.
No, you're making
but you
up
needed
arbitrary
to monologue
rules.
First.
His name is Mudsy, which is so unpleasant because it feels mildly racist. It feels like something that he called black people back when he was alive.
Oh, so you admit that this is racist?
That's a reach. That's a reach.
No, it is a reach. That's why I'm saying that this personally, to me, felt in my heart like that's what he called black
Look,
people.
The most important plot point happens here. Second most. The mask is left behind when
hold on.
Him with the gong.
I actually got the...
What did they say? Going, go.
Like, okay.
I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
It is the best constructed joke of the show. I did hate it, but like, I recognize that.
I want to say going gong at some point. I would like to find an excuse to use it in casual conversation when I have a portable tiny gong with me.
You should definitely do it at a Chinese restaurant. I don't think there will be any repercussions for that. You a white woman carrying around carrying a tiny gong around, B, doing it at a Chinese restaurant. maybe you could hang upside down off a bunk bed. I don't know how you get the bunk bed into the Chinese restaurant, but you know, you can figure it out.
You know what? YouTube prank videos are really going to the next level. Some dude got shot in one recently, and was the guy who shot him was found not guilty.
I thought you wanted to keep it going.
No, I don't. I want to talk about this for a second.
Like halfway if through this episode, it's already
if
like-
you're a YouTuber and your whole deal is being a very large human being who intimidates and harasses strangers in the food court at the mall, and one of them pulls out a gun and shoots you, they are correct. And a jury last week found that that is the case. Not guilty, ladies and gentlemen. What I'm trying to say is shoot your local YouTuber. Am I allowed to say that? I'm being told I'm not allowed to say that.
I feel like we are technically on YouTube, so I don't like this line of questioning at all.
But we're not doing prank videos where we intimidate people.
Mm. I intimidate people just by existing.
It's true.
Yeah, you know what? Now it's gray and I don't like it. Anyway. Yeah, the mask is gotten by our heroes. This is important for a moment later that upset me greatly. Now we have two Montezumas. There's a snake guy and there's a bird guy. And the bird guy pulls a Nerf gun on the kids and threatens them, but refuses to pull the trigger, which should be a hint.
They also mentioned Montezuma does that it's his high priest. Because I was wondering, like, wait, what? What is that guy? Is it? So they do explain it. It's terrible.
Former President Ronald Reagan once said, if you're explaining, you're losing. And the fact you need to explain to me who the second character is means you're losing in this episode.
So you love Ronald Reagan is what you're saying?
I'm trying to say I love Reaganomics. I'm a big fan of Bedtime for Bonzo. I think we need more movies starring monkeys. Dunstan checks in. Did not do it for me.
Ray loves trickle down anything. Because he enjoys being peed on.
Yeah, that tracks.
I mean, kink is kink, baby.
I ain't shaming, I'm just saying.
So they go into the ruins where they find a jackhammer and hear a wailing sound, which is apparently amateur chain work.
A jackhammer is the the archaeologist's tool. Because as we well know, archaeologists go around with jackhammers, jackhammering ancient stone carvings.
Thank you for saying
the regs.
Yeah, this is why famously every dinosaur skeleton you see is in 75,000 pieces.
Those are paleontologists. I'm talking about archaeologists.
I mean, what's the difference?
If you were to ask
any
6-year-old boy, you would be properly chastised, I assure you.
Okay, I mean, here's the deal. Challenge accepted. You better train him up at Egon's 6th birthday party, which I assume I will be at. I'm going to ask him that question. You better be ready because you might fall down.
Luna's getting an invite. You're not.
I mean, that tracks too. Okay, so now we meet the real Professor Lundgren, who is chained up. It's Woody Allen. Why is it Woody Allen?
That's what a professor is.
Just every professor is Woody Allen in 1971?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. The lights go out, and now that professor has gone missing as well, making me immediately suspect him. I'm wrong. And we do a bit where the Funky Phantom is riding the jackhammer and he ends up like on the ceiling, on the walls, on the floor. He ends up jackhammering a wall that ends up allowing everybody to escape. And I just wrote here, this shit is not funny even a little bit.
It's not funny
at all. Gina, defend this bullshit.
I think I stopped paying attention by this point.
Yeah, yeah.
You're the one who liked this episode.
I did not say I liked it. I said it was fine. If I'm dating someone and I say they're fine, that person is getting dumped. It doesn't mean I like them. I'm saying it did not make me mad.
Yo. Oh my God. What happened to the fucking 80s, Gina? When some girl tells you you're fine, that means that you're hot as shit.
You all know that I didn't mean it in the 80s sense when I said it.
Here's the deal.
He said it was a nothing burger.
This might be the realest episode we've ever done. Just for the record. Okay, so they go to the dune buggy, and now they're being chased by Montezuma and his driver in the other driver car. And that we cut to Montezuma and his friend, and Montezuma is very clearly wearing the mask. You know, that mask. They're chasing the other group because they have. And I know it's a continuity error, and I am very unhappy. Somehow, I'm disappointed in this episode.
Yeah.
Gina, defend your baby.
No, I'm getting sick of you guys telling me that I liked something that I just said was fine.
This is a Gina versus Ray and Chan episode. Own it.
You guys consistently lose because the internet doesn't like it when you bully women.
There's a certain high percentage of the internet that loves it, though.
Yeah, man, we are cornering that incel market.
We're basically the fresh and fit of Knowing Is Half the Podcast.
I don't know what that is, but I am instinctively uncomfortable.
Please don't look it up.
Also, fact that Ray does know what it is very on brand.
I watch a lot of liberal YouTube, so I know what a lot of conservative nonsense is. What can I tell you? That is my story.
Yep.
Okay, the gang drives backwards up a pyramid because it's the only way Funky Phantom can drive when he takes the wheel. Y'all making sense of this?
Yeah, it was weird how he said it because, like, obviously the idea is like, I'm so good at driving that I could drive backwards and outrun this guy. And then the guy catches up to him. So he's like, oh, whoops. Oh, hey, why don't I guess I could just drive backwards to get away, which doesn't make any sense. It's also, I don't know why he's driving when all of the other humans are in the car. He's not even doing a bit that is necessary for ghost physics.
Maybe it's his one thing that he can contribute. Like he's like, can you guys please let me drive?
And okay, hold on. Gina, your argument is the Revolutionary War ghost is the best driver of the crew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't know how old those others are. They might be underage.
Have you never seen Baby Driver, Gino?
Yeah, he's literally 9 months old.
Ugh, it's a really weird movie.
I hate this bit. I don't know
why Edgar Wright did it. It's, it's a choice.
I hate this bit.
So the Phantom pretends to be a ghost because they end up in the Temple of the Sun God. Let's get to the end here. The Phantom pretends to be the real Montezuma ghost because an identical costume is just found inside. What is happening in this episode?
I mean, where else is Montezuma going to put his shit? He's one of those dudes that's like I don't want to worry about choosing clothes.
Wait.
I'm going to get 7 of the same outfit and just have the same thing every day.
So your argument is Montezuma is Peter Griffin with a closet of the same outfit over and over and over again.
I'm arguing that Montezuma is me because I don't need to be choosing a different fucking linen shirt for work every day. I'm just going to get the same goddamn one.
Honestly, that slaps pretty correct. So I have nothing to add here.
Mandarin collar.
Which t-shirt from a video game I worked on am I going to wear today? It's too real. It's too real. I don't like it. We meet we win here. Montezuma's tricked. He runs away into the off-screen arms of police who solve the entire thing. Montezuma was actually the assistant museum director who got the call from Woody Allen that said, I have this mask. Please come get it. He somehow was in cahoots with this race car driver in this race in the same area who then intentionally lost the race so he could drive off track, steal the mask, drive away with the mask, finish last place in the race so he could steal the mask with coverage. This makes zero sense.
It actually,
none of this makes sense.
Makes way more sense than anything else in the episode.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And I just
sake.
Like, I was like, man, this could have been done a lot better, but I
no,
get
that's
it.
A true statement. No, this involves so much reaching. We have to now know that this professional race car driver in dune buggy slash clearly not dune buggy races over the dunes of Mexico happens to be best friends with this assistant museum creator and happened to be in town for a race at the exact same time, a 24-hour period where this assistant director got the call about a mask, who then decided to turn evil, bring his friend, the race car driver, in, who's also evil. And if it wasn't for the fact that our heroes were so bad at racing,
well, now hold on,
they never would have known. This is
safe
awful.
To say that every assistant museum manager and every race car driver are evil to begin with, so they don't have to flip. Like, where we're talking like psychological motivations, I think that all tracks.
Okay, I'm actually on board right now. I still don't like it. And that is how we end the episode, except we're not done yet because we have a music video that's just literally the intro a second time.
At first I thought maybe this was like a Daily Motion mistake they put it, but then I remember that this was like a thing that they used to do for shows. They would bookend the show with the theme song.
If you spent that much money, I'm curious if Mickey Dolenz did any of the song, because if he did, that may be part of the way they got him in. It was like, look, you know, it's not a great wage, but you're going to get a little taste every time that theme song plays. We'll play it twice an episode, baby. Come on board.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't like it.
As well, you shouldn't.
This entire show just strikes me as being exceptionally lazy. Just lazy. It's 2 years after Scooby-Doo hit. We're releasing a show that's exactly like Scooby-Doo from the same studio, except Snagglepuss, an already existing character, is now a Revolutionary War ghost with a knockoff much lesser than Scooby-Doo crew. I'm just going to say Mindy Kaling ain't rebooting this shit.
I would like to end this with a second transcription that the good folks, machine learning Adobe, gave me of this version of the song. Copycat, All Miscarried, Mysterious 1776 Similar Packages. We found a red flag.
God damn it.
In 18 months, and they will come when you get there without a cat and that bunk bed.
Yo, I don't hate that. Tell me at least that this was asked for by a patron.
It was indeed.
Thank you.
And you just made them feel really bad, Ray.
Exactly. I mean, this is... We're giving it up to the patrons, and you're just being a dick about it. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
The patrons are trying to punish us. I want them to know it's working. That is actually celebrating them.
To be fair, you are correct. It is Thank Rob you. Schaefer, a wonderful patron of ours.
Rob. Last
Funky Phantom.
Rob, why are you doing this?
That delivered.
This one...
So for the rest of this month, we are doing more Halloween, right?
Yeah. If I can go ahead, let me find the Google Calendar. There are so many I have open right now.
I know we got Archie's Weird Mysteries coming up. We've got Inch High Private Eye. We got a couple more.
Inch High Private Eye. What are you talking? Why is that on list?
That's November. Never mind.
Rob Schaefer. No, Rob Schaefer suggested that too. I'm calling an audible, Rob Schaefer. You're one of my favorite people because you're a Patreon patron. But that does not fit a Thanksgiving or Halloween theme. I want to veto that choice. I'm fine with Archie's Weird Mysteries. I think we can do better seasonally. Rob Schaefer,
yeah.
Listen, you got like a month. Rob Schaefer, please suggest us a Thanksgiving episode.
Thanksgiving is the season of Muggsy Bogues, Spud Webb, and Inch High Private Eye.
You sound like the former president right now, and I appreciate the impression. That said, Rob Schaefer, you're on notice. You have 30 days from when you hear this episode, hopefully the day we release it.
Wait, but we need to tell me a Thanksgiving episode and we'll do it. Thanksgiving episodes in November. That's my rule.
I would like to, but Chad over here wants to do Inch High Private Eye.
Nothing but.
Sorry, Gina, go ahead.
Nothing but Halloween for October. Nothing but Thanksgiving for November. Nothing but Christmas for December. I demand it. It needs to be so.
What is this? Rob Schaefer has taken over the podcast because we also have Robotic Stooges, something that is not Thanksgiving at all. I am angry with Robert Clark Chan right now.
Yeah, I need to double check these because these are not holiday things, Chan.
No.
I think you don't understand the rules, and
I would like to do these things. I would like to do them. But not now. Somebody. Robert Clark Chan, somehow you've still disappointed me.
Somebody said we should get patron suggestions.
Seasonal.
Certainly wasn't me.
Tried to put it in, and then somebody kept pushing them back so that we could finish out goddamn G.I. Joe. Now they're in the seasonal months, so maybe somebody else should do the scheduling.
I'm telling you right now, I'm not watching whatever is up next week unless it is a Halloween episode.
Y'all on notice, Patreon patrons of any level, you send us a message, you tweet at Robert Clark Chan on Twitter. Shit. You tweet at me on Twitter and I see it. That's debatable. I get a lot of messages. Who Would Win Show is very popular. The point I'm trying to make here is, we want seasonal suggestions for October, November, December, and you know what holidays fall in each month. This comes to you. Give us things to watch, and we will watch them. This is your chance to influence the show. Rob Schaefer, I appreciate you. I hated this. I'm mad at you. I still appreciate you. We are not doing those suggestions until 2024 because we deserve better. You deserve better yourself. Give us seasonal content.
Ari Dunn, can people go watch Gen V and Loki?
No!
It's a funky phantom!
The spirit of 1776, even, at your service!
We found a friend in Funky Phantom. Hop right in just when you need him most. And Boo will too, and you can't do without him. The cat and the funky phantom ghost.
It's funky phantom time! Whoa!
Hi, I'm Kevin Goatee.
Hey, I'm Kevin Israel.
We host Gutting the Sacred Cow, the best and most unique movie debate podcast out there. Why?
Because we invite our guests to pick a film that they find overrated or hate and try to convince us to see their argument.
They must pick a film that is a financial success, widely beloved, or critically acclaimed.
That's right. Some of the films our guests have tried to eviscerate, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Pulp Fiction, Ghostbusters? You can find us on all podcast platforms like Apple, Google, Spotify, and more. And if you want to watch our smiling faces, we're also on YouTube.
GuttingTheSacredCow.com is where you find all of our information. And we look forward to our guests infuriating you when they attack your favorite films.